Hey guys, just wanted to take a moment to thank you for listening to Sidebar Forever. If you like the show, please subscribe to us at sidebarforever.com, as well as share episodes of the podcast on your social media. That way, new listeners can find us as well. As previously announced by Warner Brothers, Wonder Woman 1984 hit theaters and HBO Max on Christmas Day. Stars Gal Gadot and Chris Pine, as well as director Patty Jenkins, are back with more adventures of our favorite Amazon, along with Kristen Wiig and Pedro Pascal as the big bads in the movie. Early reviews are lukewarm at best, and we understand why. The sequel has problems that the 2017 original film did not, from the runtime, the pacing, confusing plot points, and character motivations, there's just a lot to unpack. Thus, Dwight and Swain are here with their podcast review. But hey, it ain't all bad. Kristen Wiig is terrific as the brilliant but awkward Dr. Barbara Minerva, aka Cheetah. And there's a mid-credits Easter egg that will make you stand up and cheer. And lastly, there be spoilers abound on the episode, just so you've been warned. And as always, thanks for listening to the show.
Good morning, Dr. Silberman. How's the knee?
Did you just have a brain fart?
I know Taekwondo.
Stop eating my sesame cake.
You're killing me, Smalls.
Fuck with me, and we'll see who shits on the sidewalk.
Come quietly, or there will be trouble.
Clearly, I wasn't talking to you, big titties. You cherub-looking motherfucker.
While you were still learning how to spell your name, I was being trained to conquer galaxies.
The real question is, what are those?
Wonder Woman 1984 was released on Christmas Day.
Wonder Woman!
Was the world really waiting for you?
Da, 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 da.
I don't think that they were.
Da, 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 da.
This is not what I expected. I want shit corrected. Sorry.
Oh. Oh my goodness.
Wow.
I didn't know you had bars, yo. I didn't know you were gonna bring the freestyle.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
The sequel to the very first Wonder Woman movie, Wonder Woman 1984, was indeed released on Christmas Day via HBO Max and also in theaters. And Dwight and I are here to give our opinions of the movie.
Right.
And to talk about some of the good, the bad, and what I will say, the problematic points.
Yeah. Because it was never terrible. It was a question of pacing and timing.
I don't know, yo. I don't know.
In 2021, I'm trying to remain positive.
Well, I mean, yeah, but we got to keep it 100, though,
this
yo.
Is, this
I mean,
is true. It's like, this is true.
You know, it's got to be what it is. But
right? I mean, Gal Gadot, I mean, she I like her. And she's awesome. The scripting, here's what I want them to stop doing. I want them to stop upping the ante on the villains every time they change the episode or change the movie. Just because it's friggin' the second movie doesn't mean that they have two villains.
Well, yeah, that's a problem, and I want to actually get to that.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
Let's definitely get to that in the harder discussion. But
okay.
For Wonder Woman 1984, as Dwight kind of implied there, you know, the original team is basically back. Gal Gadot is back as Diana Prince, Chris Pine, and we're introduced to Kristen Wiig and Pedro Pascal as Dr. Barbara Minerva and as Maxwell Lord. Patty Jenkins directed the original. She's back for this one. And Patty Jenkins worked on the script and the story that Dwight is referencing with Geoff Johns. And so, yeah, to go right into it, I thought for sure, like you said, there were just problems with the story in general. I mean, it was just like, it was confusing.
Yeah.
I didn't quite understand what was supposed to be happening with Max Lord and his character and his, quote, powers.
Right.
Like what you were just talking about, you know, You don't have to have two villains. Every story doesn't have to have what I call bad guy and worst guy.
Right.
You know, it's like you don't have to up the ante.
Every preceding sequel doesn't have to have one more, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, if freaking James Bond adapted that mentality, we would never get to the fucking movie.
No. You know, and I mean, and to some extent, you know, you do see like, you know, okay, Goldfinger, and then you see Oddjob. You know, you do see the bad person and their henchmen.
Right.
But, you know, we just got a whole lot of screen time with, if Wig is supposed to be Pedro Pascal's, you know, hench person, then, you know, we got a lot of screen time with her, a lot of screen time with him. And,
right.
You know, trying to understand, you know, their backstories and their motivations and, oh, I'm lonely and I'm this kind of a shrinking violet. And he's this kind of maniacal huckster,
right,
used car salesman a la Donald Trump,
right,
you know, in the 80s and the art of the deal and shit. It was just, it was just a mess. And then some people were like, oh, well, you know, it's a superhero movie. Well, no. As a movie.
Right.
It was just like difficult to follow. And
right.
The pacing was off, you know, like these long stretches where nothing happens.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's true. One of the things that people need to stop making excuses for, and you can't make excuses for anymore now, especially with the success of the Marvel movies, is it's not just about superpowers and superheroes. It's about the consequences. It's about the worlds they're immersed in. It's about the choices they make and about the scenarios they're caught up in that they utilize those powers in to overcome. Right.
Right.
So all this stuff about, oh, it's a superhero movie, that's the first, you know, no, that's not an excuse. Take that back to the 80s, 1984 probably.
There we go.
You know, but you know, what Swain is saying is right. I mean, you know, there was too many plot lines, too many plot threads going on, you know, and we like to think of ourselves as intelligent, you know, geeks, blurs, nerds, whatever you want to have it, and we could follow it, but you know, the idea behind a story is to tell a coherent one and let it be what it is. I mean, let it be, you know, from point A to B to C, you know, and we stop putting all these various little small caveats in if they're not really going to pay off in the end. And they did, they tied everything up in a nice little bow, but at the same time, it was like, it was just so quick. It happened so quickly. It's like, what, that made, who cares? Like, it made no difference to me. Like, I knew from the very beginning on Paradise Island, yes, Paradise Island, Themyscira, I knew from the very beginning that whatever was stated in the first part of the movie was going to be reutilized and regurgitated in the very end.
Of course. They forecasted that, like, you know, you knew it was going to be like a bookend or a coda to
right.
At the end. Yeah.
Right. And that shouldn't be. I mean, I never really want to see a point wherein it has to be, you feel like you have to put things in place because that's where they belong. I mean, I get it. You know, I know there's a rhythm and rhyme to storytelling, you know, but at the same time, like, you know, as a director, you have to be experimental enough and challenge the directive enough to where you can say, this is my movie. Well, she did, I'm sure. Or at least don't be so caught up on fan service to the point to where you're not giving enough of the story room to breathe. And I think that's what happened in this situation. Like, do we really need the fucking armor that got tore off in a matter of 30 seconds? There was this great armor that one Amazon survived wearing, Asteria survived, and you know, it was a fabled thing that they showed in the beginning that everybody got to at the very end, for the Amazons that made it to the very end, and mm-hmm. then had to be torn off by a super minor individual that just got powers. That,
well, you say that though, D. But that cheetah is Wonder Woman's, her biggest, you know, rogue.
Right. Yeah, I understand.
That's her greatest foe, as it, you know, directly as it relates to her. I mean, you can go back to the gods.
Right.
You know, and her battling the gods, but that's her greatest foe. And so I love that armor. I love the look of it. I love the way it looked on Gal Gadot.
Okay.
And I love the idea of what it is, you know, this idea of legacy and her putting it on, you know, for this big battle. That was fine to me, but right. It's like you said, it just didn't seem to measure up to the grandeur that we had been sold as to what that armor was and what it meant.
I mean, dude, I mean, come on. This mortal physical shell, I mean, yeah, I mean, she wished for it. This is one of the crazy little plot holes and or one of the MacGuffins inside the story, wherein this thing grants wishes, and now this thing has become Pedro Pascal's character, and she wishes to be an apex predator, and arguably, you know, a cheetah's never been an apex predator. I get it, whatever. But the fact that this god weapon, which is what that armor was getting shredded by mortal pugilism was ridiculous to me.
Well, but Cheetah was powered by magic, though. She was powered by the supernatural magic of the Dreamstone.
Yeah, I guess that's it.
They never explained how she went from being just a human who had this, you know, this extraordinary strength and agility, etc., to now all of a sudden she looks like, you know, like something like a one of the splicers from Batman Beyond.
that would have been awesome. Good.
That would have been very awesome, but. Just to kind of pause for a second. So what we find in the sequel is Diana is working for the museum. She's mm-hmm. like a curator or, right. you know, an art. She's kind of like, you know, the movie was kind of one part Raiders, one part Bridesmaids, one part Bridesmaids. Superhero movie, one part Lex Luthor and Superman 1970. It was just all kinds right. of things going on.
One part girlfriends.
But we find, you know, Diana's working in the museum. She's keeping a low profile. She's still doing things as Wonder Woman and saving people.
Right.
But she's kind of doing it in the shadows, and she's not really out there. And she meets Dr. Minerva, finds out that Minerva has this stone called the Dreamstone, which apparently you can hold it, make a wish, and then you get your wish. And, of course, you know, danger and mayhem ensues. Diana holds the stone and wishes for Steve to be back so she can love him again.
Unwittingly wishes.
And unwittingly, Dr. Minerva holds the stone and wishes that she can be
like Diana.
More like Diana and be a more confident, powerful person.
Right.
And so we see all of that play out. And then we're introduced to Maxwell Lord, who is kind of like I said, he's the huckster. He's claiming to be one thing to the world, but he really doesn't have the stuff.
Yeah, he's scummy.
Yeah, and then he, it's basically, you know, we follow the track of his path to becoming, you know, all powerful and getting, you know, right. this desire that he wants. And
right.
Anyway, that's the basic premise of the movie. But, you know, the other thing for me was, like, you know, the messy Middle East politics.
Right.
I was like, what?
Right. And
then, you know, Diana was too caught up in Steve Trevor.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Steve Trevor. I read the old comics. I read the new comics.
Right.
I watched the Wonder Woman television show, which we, of course, you know, serenaded the listeners with.
Right.
Early on. But, you know, okay, he dies and, you know, in 60 years, you never go out on another date.
Right.
You never do anything. You keep a low profile.
Right.
You don't stop the Nazis in the 40s. We don't see any of that. There's none of that.
Wow.
You know, yeah. And then she brings Steve back in the body of this other guy.
Which is weird.
His spirit
shit.
Somehow.
That was weird, dude.
It was weird. You know, even my wife was like, why is this happening? How is this happening?
Right.
You know, Steve comes back and she needs him to teach her how to fly.
Right.
What?
Hey, man, R. Kelly wasn't around, so.
Oh, God. And I was just like, you know, Wonder Woman is a badass.
Right.
Really and truly, for me, you could have taken out the whole Steve Trevor piece and still had the same movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
We didn't need any of that stuff. And I love, some of the scenes of them together and their banter.
Right.
I loved him trying on the clothes, which is kind of like a romantic comedy. That was,
you know,
trying on the 80s outfit.
Sure. Everybody wears parachutes. You know? Everybody parachutes these days.
Oh, my God. You know? And I love the fact that the at least the way they played him, you know, when it got time, you know, to get down to throwing hands.
Right.
Steve jumped right in and it's like, okay, yeah, he's a soldier.
Right.
Dealing with the convoy in the
right.
Middle East.
Right.
And Steve jumps on top of the tank and then smashes the thing with his foot.
Right.
And then starts, you know, he knows, okay, look, this stuff can be, you know, he knows what he's doing. You
right.
know, he's been in situations like that before. He's not afraid of the sweat.
Right.
You know.
I guess my thing was, you know, one of the things I didn't like about this whole situation was is that, okay, this Wonder Woman took on in her first escapade in her own show, in her own movie, she took on a freaking god. I didn't see any blood. I didn't see any blood drawn. I didn't see any kind of scarification. She fought friggin' in the Justice League against one of Darkseid's most fabled minions. I didn't see any blood. I didn't see any scars. She was all ate up in this one, man. I mean, she was, you know, looking ragged and hard on the floor when she got kicked around a couple of times by Cheetah. You know, and I guess it could be worked into the plot to say that, well, the more Cheetah's powers grew, the less hers became. I guess that was a thing.
Well, that was the thing. They depowered her.
Okay.
And made her more vulnerable.
Okay.
And I'm like, okay, already we're to this? Already? I mean, they did it in Superman 2.
Right.
You know, where he gave up his powers so that we could see Superman get his ass kicked and feel sorry for him.
Right.
But I don't know, man. And then, I don't know.
Well, the biggest injustices to the whole film was the trailer. Because the trailer was phenomenal, sir. Yeah. The trailer thought you were going to see, you know, a brand new heroine that's being, you know, fully, you know, rendered in the best light. And she's doing all the miraculous things, the cool things that heroes do. And then you see this film, it's like, that scene was missing. Maybe they truncated that scene. Maybe they cut it just in the right place to make it more interesting for the trailer. And that's exactly what they did. Like the only music I heard from the 80s, and you tell me if I'm right about this, was this really crazy off-kiltered version of Relax by Frankie Goes to Hollywood.
Was that really Relax, or was that like a Relax sound-alike?
It could have been.
Don't, 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 don't,
don't, don't.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it's like, okay.
There were no 80s needle drops. There was nothing from Prince or Bruce Springsteen.
None of that, sir.
Or Flock of Seagulls or anybody from 1984.
Yes, man. No. Yeah, man. Something in that catalog you could have easily, I'm sure, had access to if you thought about it, putting it in there. I mean, no Adam and the Ants, no friggin', you know. It was just, it was weird, dude. I mean.
Well, to address that point, I mean, again, for a movie they spent $200 million on, I know licensing music is very expensive.
Right.
But you would have thought that they would have given you at least three or four good needle drops.
Right.
Where you'd say, oh, yeah, that's 84 for your ass right there.
Right, right. I'm there, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, hell, you can't tell me their pockets aren't deeper than freaking Netflix's pockets, dude. And Netflix, they did freaking Weird Science, but Stranger Things, and they have mad needle drops in Stranger Things.
Yeah, well, not only Stranger Things, but the Black Mirror BBC show. They did one. I forgot the name of the episode. It's the one that they got a lot of critical praise and fan praise for. It's got a Spanish name in the title, but it's about, you know, people who are dead and they're living in this alternate whatever, and they two women fall in love.
Oh yeah, 70, yeah, 1980s. Yeah. Well, Gugu Mbatha-Raw's in that one.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I can think of the name of it.
And they play some 80s cuts in there to you know, to make it feel like, okay, yeah, this is the 80s, but
yeah.
The CGI, I thought, was not great.
Mm.
Many times where it looked unconvincing. I was really thrown off by the goofy kind of animated Golden Lasso.
Okay.
You know, and Wonder Woman swinging around like she's Spider-Man, and then she's swinging around on the end of a plane, and then she's swinging her. She grabs lightning with her lasso, which maybe some of that stuff is stuff that she's done in the comics for years, but it just looked ridiculous in the movies and didn't really work.
You know, honestly, I thought the grabbing lightning thing was cool. If she could fully live up to her legacy of being a daughter of Zeus, or a daughter of Zeus, so to speak, like his offspring, or whatever the case may be. Hippolyta, but you know it. It's Hippolyta. It's Hippolyta, not Hippolyta.
I think it's Hippolyta. Yeah.
Okay. You know. To me, I mean that works if that's the case, because you know she's not really human. She's created from clay. Blah blah blah, et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's okay. She can have these kind of crazy little extra, you know, vignettes of display of powers here and there as she grows into herself. But you know, the fact that she was like lassoing missiles and being strung along by missiles, and then all of a sudden she, you know, she had to let go, or she pulled a bullet out of the air. And, I get it. It works. It's effective. But I mean, you know, it kind of seemed like useless to me. The best use of the lasso for me is when she was in the hall of the White House and she's using it as a shield.
Yeah.
That was freaking awesome.
That was great.
You know?
I was there for that all day long. And,
right.
And, you know, and the other thing I want to say, too, before we get into, there's three areas I thought were kind of problematic.
Okay.
Is that, you know, I think I can't speak for you. I was here for this 100%.
Yes, man.
I was ready to be entertained and wild and ready to be like, okay, goddamn, I got me a fat ass Wonder Woman sequel.
Right.
And it just didn't deliver. And it seems crazy that it didn't because, again, you had a lot of talented people.
Yeah.
Who, for the most part, for me, the 80 to 90% got it right the first movie.
Right.
You know, the only thing I had a problem with in the first movie was the final battle sequence. And Patty Jenkins has gone on record as saying that was something that that the suits, Warner Brothers, they gave her notes on and wanted to add in. She wanted it to end on a quieter moment.
Right.
But they wanted the big final battle.
Of course they did. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, because they're lazy. But I mean, I just thought there was a lot of fan interest and excitement that they squandered with this. But
yeah.
Three things I want to get to as far as I thought were problematic. One, Diana is supposed to be a warrior.
Yeah.
An Amazon.
Right.
She's supposed to be the ultimate physical athletic specimen.
Right.
Hand-to-hand combat, you know, throwing spears and javelins and shields and jumping and leaping.
Right.
Athleticism. She's supposed to be like the ultimate Olympian athlete.
Right.
Gal Gadot is tall and slim and she looks like a model and she's beautiful. And I think she gives me a lot of Diana's heart, yeah. But I need her to look like an Amazon. And the reason why is this. If she's skinny or she's thin and she picks someone up and holds them by one leg,
uh-huh.
If I don't see muscles, it just looks like magic. It doesn't look like a warrior or a super fit person doing it. It just looks like magic. It looks like me doing it.
Well, I mean, to your point, though, I mean, you said it earlier. That's what she is. She's based on
magic. No, but she's supposed to be super fit like the dudes are. She's supposed to be cut, muscular. Like impressive and imposing, not just attractive and tall.
I mean, you know, that's where we have to agree disagree on that, man, because I see the it's like the way she was beating the hell out of Amazons that were like a third of her age. She was about to win the Olympiad, you know? Like, there's no way that a child should be able to do the things she was doing. But it's only because of the fact that she's got that God-imbued ability and powers that she was able to do that. You know what I mean? So that's why, I mean, no matter how she worked out, she would never get to think on a muscle tone because she doesn't need muscle tone. You know,
I just have a problem with it because I think that it does the character a bit of a disservice.
I agree.
To not have her be imposing. Like if we get a She-Hulk TV show.
Yeah.
With Jessica Walters, I think is the name of the character.
Yeah.
She can't just be tall and green.
Right. She can't be. That'd be horrible, dude.
She has to be hulkish.
And Tatiana Maslany, who's playing her, is not nowhere near hulkish, dude. I mean, she's a gorgeous, fit
young
lady.
But she may be playing the Jessica Walters portion, right. And they may actually CGI.
Right, like you did the character
Hulk. Like they did Mark Ruffalo in the films.
Right.
But, you know, we see characters like, you know, Captain America. He looks buffed.
Right.
You know, we see characters in, you know, who are in armor or who have technology to assist them. They don't have to look that way.
Right.
You know, Captain Marvel doesn't necessarily have to look that way because she's a soldier. I mean, she should be in shape, but she's a soldier and she's covered head to toe.
Right.
And she is super powered. She's shooting, you know, blasts and flying and doing all these other things.
Right.
But Diana is supposed to be good hand-to-hand combat strategist, mm-hmm. warrior, fight, mm-hmm. kick, mm-hmm. jump, flip. You know, shields, punching, kicking, you know, all of it.
Right.
She should look like she should be able to do that stuff. Otherwise, to me, it just looks like movie magic.
Right.
Which, again, if that's what you're going to do, I guess that's fine. But it does the character a disservice. And, you know, I am always let down when I don't have that. You
right.
know?
I agree. I mean, I, the comic book character is the best example of what you're supposed to look like. I mean, the Diana that's drawn by... good artists, I like to say, and that's of course a tricky term. Always show her with a little bit of athletic build, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Even in the animated versions. I mean, that's what she looks like.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, Robin Wright Penn looked kind of kick-ass-ish.
Right.
You know, some of the other Amazons that were walking around on Themyscira,
yeah,
they looked like wrestlers and like, you know, fitness competitors.
Yeah.
You know, like UFC fighters. They looked like Gina Carano in her prime. They looked like, you know, fighters. And she just looks like a thin, tall, graceful-looking model, you know. Right. But the second thing I had an issue with was I was just like, okay, so Diana... Steve Trevor's spirit goes into this guy, random guy's body. Diana has sex with this random guy's body.
Arando, we call him, yeah.
Arando.
Arandolorian, sir.
the Arandolorian. Okay, there's no consent.
Hey, you know, this is 1984, sir. There are quite
I was just like, okay.
There are quite other cases that are on record that happened too. So,
well, but I'm just saying, it's never right to do it. And of course, like, this is a weird turn in the story.
Yeah.
To have it happen, and first of all, we didn't understand what was going on anyway. With okay, wait a minute, is this like some Freaky Friday shit? Now Steve is in some guy's body.
Right.
Suppose this guy has a girlfriend or a wife. Suppose he's gay. Suppose he just doesn't like Diana Prince.
Right. And what didn't you mention to me offline or in a conversation with me, you and Adrian, where you said that what happened to this guy while he wasn't in his body? Did he go to hell?
Right. Like, what happened? Yeah. He's in some weird purgatory. And then I found out after the fact, and see if you caught on to this.
Right.
The actor who's playing, and on top of that, he doesn't even get a name. I think they called him in the credits, Handsome Guy.
Wow.
Like, that's his name. Okay, so look, the actor who's playing him,
right,
playing the character,
right?
They hired him and they styled his hair so that he would look like Lyle Wagner, who played Steve Trevor on the television
show. Wow, seriously?
That was supposedly the intent, and I never got any of that.
No. And he got no screen time, dude. I mean, he was there for the minute he was in bed momentarily.
No, he was there when he first contacted her.
Okay.
At the party.
Okay. And then he was at the end of the thing, and she's walking down the street.
And then at the end, that's it.
Wow.
And then that was it. Wow. So, but the other thing was something that our friend David Williams, artist formerly known as Brohawk, he brought up on online. He was saying DC has a long history of taking, you know, seemingly smart blonde women with glasses and turning them into supervillains.
Yeah, man.
You know, you got Michelle Pfeiffer in the original Batman movies in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You got Uma Thurman in the original Batman movies in the 80s. Same thing. Nerds with glasses who all of a sudden become these badasses.
Mm-hmm.
You have Margot Robbie, who's kind of like this psychotherapist or whatever, in Suicide Squad. And now she becomes, Harley Quinn.
Right.
And now wig. And it's like they have a long history of this. It's like, okay, everybody doesn't have, you know, every nerd is not seething with, you know... the desire to take over the world or to become, you know, right, this bombastic person. Some people are just happy being who they are, and it's just kind of a trope.
Yeah, it is. It's a tired trope, man. It's exactly what I was going to say, dude. It's like, come on, man. You know, I mean, really? I mean, I guess for the 80s, it's that time, so to speak. I mean, you can kind of chalk it up to where that's where they were. But, you know, I have no confidence in that, man. You can throw that out altogether. I'd be a lot more surprised. And it seems like almost they're telegraphing and playing it close to the cuff by even allowing it to be exist as a constant, ongoing, repetitive mode. You know, it's just weird, dude. Like, okay, I know who that is. Wink, wink. You know?
Right, right, right.
Like, get out of here. Right.
It's just kind of lame. But you know, apparently they're also too. If you really think about it, as it relates to, you know, Gal Gadot's introduction in Batman v Superman and then in Justice League and then to now, that the Wonder Woman in the Snyderverse, if you will.
Right. Yeah.
Is not the same Wonder Woman in the Jenkinsverse.
Yeah.
Because there are some timeline and some continuity issues that don't quite hold up.
Right.
So there's some problems with that. But
I believe it. Because there's no driving vision, dude. It's all, everybody's doing their own thing.
There's no Feige.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, everybody's doing their own thing. It's like, you know what? this would be a great script if we, well, let's take it through a script doctor. Let's take it through this whole controlled ideal and mechanism that makes everything work together in a combined universe like you guys are trying to do. Without that, it's just a bunch of people doing whatever they want to do at the time, you know?
Yeah. And Snyder does not have the reputation for caring about character and story and narrative as much as he does about visuals. Okay. And things looking, you know, powerful and visual and evocative and looking kick ass. So,
well, I'm looking forward to see what he does. I'm looking forward to seeing what this new version of the Justice League is gonna portray in the show.
Because yeah, you can miss me with that part. No, I'm not gonna be watching it.
You know? Oh yeah.
Yeah, I have no interest at all. I can't give him any more of my money. And he produced.
Well, you don't have to. It's free on HBO. So
yeah, it is. Yeah, there you go. Okay, I'm not going to give him any more of my time.
Time, there you go. You know, man, it's funny how those things equate, right? Like, it's almost like, I mean, after watching 1984, I was like, oh, man, I don't feel right about this.
Yeah.
You know, because I watched on the first day. I watched inside the first hours because I was off that day. And I was hyped, you know. I'm known to watch things inside the first few hours that it comes on. I mean, I'll
yes, you are.
You know, and it didn't pan out that way for me. So, you know, I got caught up in the stream wars, you know, wherein a bunch of people were watching at the same time, and it was low time. So what was a 3-hour movie turned to a fucking 4-hour movie for me. I was like, okay, I'm kind of over this now at this point, you know.
And that was kind of one of the other things too. Is this is a very long movie.
Yeah. Man, jeez, dude.
This is like what, 2.5 hours?
Yeah, especially as he's going to the Middle East and he's tricking the sheikh and he's erecting walls and causing all kinds of crazy ass, you know, catastrophic situations for people around the world and shit. And that wasn't good enough for you. So you're going to office of the president. And I get it. I'm just on a global scale of a comic booky movie ish type thing. This is kind of shenanigans you want to have, but. I was just kind of like over after a while, man. So can you just and Pedro was eating up the scenery left and right with his crazy maniacal, you know,
the overacting and the wig or the hairpiece. I was just like, ugh.
I'm like, dude, sit down, chill out, go away. Just you know.
I will say this: as long as the movie was, as off-paced as it was, mm-hmm. as confusing as at times as it was, and like you said, you and I are, you know, we consider ourselves to be, you know, reasonable. People who are, you know, cinephiles and who can follow stories and multiple mm-hmm. storylines, you can interweave them. Mm-hmm. You know, we're here for it all day long.
Mm-hmm.
With all of those things that were, you know, really challenging as far as this movie goes,
mm-hmm.
that mid-credit sequence with Linda Carter.
Yes, man. Asteria, sir.
Whew.
Yeah, man.
That was my shit, yo.
That was awesome, man. That was worth it. Dude.
Oh, my God.
That almost
Oh, my God.
Yeah, it almost made the preceding, like, 3.5 hours and 45 minutes.
Yeah, yo.
Almost made it worth it, dude.
Yeah, that was a great bit of casting. It was a great little touch.
Right.
And obviously, those were Linda Carter's eyes in the beginning.
Okay. Were they?
You know, when Diana was reflecting back and they showed Asteria fighting the battle.
Okay, I didn't pick up
on that. And then it did
all.
A close up on her eyes, and that was Linda Carter's eyes.
Okay. Yeah, I didn't
pick up on that at all. So, and I did feel a little flutter in my nether regions when I saw those eyes. So
nice.
I knew what was up. But
Nice.
But just to you know, just to bring it to a close, they fast tracked a third movie.
Really?
Yeah, there's gonna be a third one. And Patty Jenkins and Gal Gadot are coming back. Hopefully Steve Trevor won't be coming back. Chris Pine.
Jeez. Let's hope not.
You know, and Diana won't be having sex with another guy in another meat suit.
Right.
But
also known in the 80s as a stunt cock.
Oh. Oh, my goodness. But but as it relates to that, I mean, it is fair to point out that, you know, there is a thing called the sophomore jinx when it comes to second projects.
Right.
You know, that some movies and, you know, musicians have it, you know, when you have a franchise and when you have, you know, sequels and,
right.
You know, it happens, you know, the,
right.
The second Avengers movie was not great. Age of Ultron.
Right.
The second Thor movie, Dark World, was not great. It wasn't as good as the first Thor movie. And it certainly wasn't as good as Ragnarok.
Right.
you know, I didn't like the second Guardians as much as I liked the first Guardians. I thought the second Guardians was a little bloated and kind of missed the mark in a couple of places, at least for me.
Okay. You know? I mean, I'm coming all those things, man, but for the most part, I mean, I like most of those things because I'm invested in liking them to the point to where I don't see the folly in some of them based on the fact that as long as it carries the story someplace and it's not wasted. And like you said, Iron Man 2, did it really carry the story someplace? Not so much. But I did like some of the performances in it, you know?
Yeah, you can pretty much flush Iron Man 2 and 3, as Adrian pointed out.
No, man, you can't do that, man. Gotta have them, man.
Ugh.
It's part of Tony Stark's evolution, so it worked for me.
Well, but I'm just saying as movies, as standalone movies to be enjoyed, I just thought that they both missed, like... The third one more than the second one. The second one was just, you know, wacky characters and, you know, whatever. The third one was just like, okay, Iron Man's lost weekend with his adopted foster kid. Ugh,
I didn't care much for the whole idea of the empowering of Pepper either. That threw me off. That was weird.
Yeah.
And I absolutely abhorred the use of the Mandarin in this situation. It was a waste Ben Kingsley as the Mandarin. I mean, yeah, he pulled it off, dude, but to find out he was like this wacky British, you know, actor that couldn't get a good role, you know, in the role of his life, it was like, okay, yeah, that's a bit much for me.
Yeah.
But I mean, to your point, It's hard to duplicate the magic again, man. You know, and that's what these sophomore jinxes are, what they a lot of these movies suffer from.
Yeah. So, for anyone who hasn't seen it, again, you can see Wonder Woman for about 20 some odd more days.
Yeah.
On HBO Max, and it'll be in theaters for a while, and then you'll have to wait until it's released on Blu-ray. Yeah, and then brought to VOD proper, but there's going to be a third movie and looks like everyone is coming back for it. So I'm definitely going to check it out, but the third time will be the charm for me, dog.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, the third time is, I mean, they got to nail it and, they got to nail it. That's all. Yeah. I can say.
that's all that you said, sir.
That concludes this episode of Sidebar Forever, hosted by Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson. You can find us online at sidebarforever.com. Any emails or questions can be directed to us at sidebarforever@gmail.com. And also, subscribe to us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, and Instagram. Sidebar Forever is copyright 2020. Dwight Clark, Swain Hunt, and Adrian Johnson.